Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we are going to recap what we saw in Serie A. That was really an exciting weekend. For the record, we are recording this right after the Genoa-Milan match, but before Juve-Chievo. We, of course, have some transfer stuff to get to, and the transfer gods were really good to us this morning because we had the rather surprising news of Kevin Prince Boateng on his way to Barca. We're going to break that down from all angles for you guys. We have some excellent Twitter questions from our listeners, and we are going to close the podcast with a mid-table and relegation race extravaganza with our expert Paolo Mangone. But before we get to that, the Higuain deal, we're going to cover it one more time, and I think this is really going to be it. We're recording this on Monday. He wasn't selected for the match against Genoa. Milan's just waiting to complete this deal for a Piatek, and then off he'll go to Chelsea. So it's just a matter of time. But joined by our great friend, Alex Goldberg, the producer, co-host, as our friend Alessandro Iacobone said on Friday, Chelsea influencer, which you are. So I have to ask you, Alex, another wrinkle to this Higuain deal, which is really, really quite exciting, were Sarri's comments after Chelsea's last match. Now, I'll tell you, anyone that's been listening to our podcast for a while, I can just speak for myself. We've been wrong a lot, but I think on Saturday we've been just absolutely spot on. So I have to ask you your reaction, Alex. What was your take from those comments after the match? And for those that didn't hear them, if you can give us a really brief synopsis of them too, please.
Yeah. Wow. It's begun, David. It has begun. We're really having fun now at Stamford Bridge. So for anybody who didn't hear or see the comments after Chelsea's deplorable loss to Arsenal, losing 2-0, but really it was way worse than that. Sarri said after the game, simply, this is a hard group of players to motivate. He pretty much just threw his players under the bus, and to some extent, rightfully so. And he did the whole thing in Italian because he was afraid that if he was going to try to speak English, he wouldn't necessarily be saying exactly what he wanted to say. He was pissed. He was absolutely pissed. Now, how do I perceive those comments? I like half of it, and I don't like half of it. The half I like is, yes, the players were horrible, and no blame should ever go to one area, meaning it shouldn't just go to the players or just go to the manager. Usually when you lose in that fashion, blame has to be spread out. And the players are professional athletes who get paid millions and millions of dollars to play a game. So they have to take some ownership and they have to be accountable. And to a certain extent, I really don't like the attitude of a handful of players on Chelsea. But I also find Sarri's quote a little bit hypocritical because Maurizio Sarri said it's a hard group of players to motivate, yet when I look at Chelsea's team and I look at Chelsea's side, and maybe some Fiorentina fans can shed some light on this, but I see somebody in their side, and I'm just using him as an example because there are a handful of players, David, who need to change their attitude or they need to be dropped. But I look at someone like Marcos Alonso, and Maurizio Sarri has chosen to play Marcos Alonso every Premier League game so far this season, and then he complains about the mentality of the team when it's very clear if you're watching Chelsea, Marcos Alonso tries when he wants. He got a contract earlier in the season, and he tries when he wants. I've never seen someone put in less effort on a top-level football club. So I asked Sarri, okay, you're complaining about the mentality of the team, yet you're choosing to put players out there who are plainly not good enough in the mind. They're not good enough in the mind. So you are a guy of continuity. You do like continuity. Napoli fans know this. We all know this. Calcio Land listeners know this. Sarri likes continuity. He's even said he's not going to change his formation until they all understand that formation before switching to another. He's rigid with rotation. We get all of that. But he's been talking about mentality and complaining about mentality for months now, and he's still chosen to put players out like Willian, who really has a poor mentality, Marcos Alonso, player like Ross Barkley tries hard, but he's not there in the head. I mean, there's a bunch of players who were just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So Maurizio Sarri, I ask you, what are you doing? You're talking out of one side of your mouth, and then you're doing something completely different on the pitch. So I like, though, that Sarri did rattle their cage because I think they still respect him enough, David. It's not like it's been a very tense period since he took over. Overall, they really do enjoy him. So I like that he rattled the cage early, but he has to proceed with caution now because if he's going to say such bold stuff after a loss like that, he's got to act on it. He's got to act on it or the same problem is just going to keep occurring. So the hope is he listens to what he said and he actually takes ownership of what he said and he puts out players that have a better mentality. But it's getting interesting. It's getting very interesting because I think two things he's known for, David, and I had a back and forth with Matteo Bonetti, our friend on Twitter, about this. The two things he's known for is being stubborn and not being great with the lineup. But then another thing he's known for now is complaining about the mentality of the team. So those two things don't exactly fit. So what will win out? Will he start to rotate more or will he just put out the same players and hope their mentality changes? I hope it's the former. I hope he actually improves on one of his own weaknesses and that's rotation, but it's going to be interesting to follow. I'm obviously still backing him. I like what he's done so far. I think people who are Sarri out are absolutely ridiculous and need to grow up, but I think Sarri also needs to look at himself in the mirror and improve on some of his weaknesses. So David, that's my take. What about you?
So right now I feel like Mike Francesa, who would just unleash the mad dog and let him just go nuts on a topic. And I kind of did it on purpose. Like, I don't want this podcast to be too Chelsea focused, but it's really important because I think you're giving a really good context of the situation Higuain is joining. And look, you know, I'm a big fan of Higuain, but definitely not the most mentally strong player that I've seen, to say the least. So to me, this is another wrinkle to the situation. I have to say about Sarri's comments specifically, you and I have talked a lot about it. I was positively surprised in a good way of how polished he was in press conferences when he first joined Chelsea. He was saying all the right things and then obviously got off to a great start. And that is probably the only thing that surprised me, is how quickly Chelsea at first adapted to him. And then, you know, the wheels are falling off a little bit now. The honeymoon period is off. And I think now we're really starting to see the Sarri that we knew at Napoli. Like, and again, probably my favorite figure in all of Serie A, player, coach, past 5 years. But he really was known for, you know, not mincing words. And I think it's one thing to do it at a team and club like Napoli, where they love that sort of stuff. Like, you just look at De Laurentiis, the way he talks, but at Chelsea, that's a completely different scenario. So I'm really curious to see how this whole Higuain thing plays out. So, Alex, I'm going to put you on the spot. You know, if you had to predict from now until the end of the season, how is Higuain ultimately going to do at Chelsea?
Overall, David, I think he's going to do well. Not amazing, but I think he will do well. He's coming to Chelsea with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He's heard many people say that he's fat or he's past it or he's not as good as this striker or that striker. And he probably feels like he has a point to prove to a certain extent. He obviously is excited to play with Maurizio Sarri, and Maurizio Sarri is excited to manage him. So even though he's definitely on the back nine, and this is not necessarily the Gonzalo Higuain of the Napoli days with Maurizio Sarri, Chelsea are getting a striker that they sorely need, that they're sorely missing. They're getting a striker who knows the system, and that's really important when anybody comes over in January, that they don't have to learn the system for too long or else really they can't hit the ground running. So I think that really works well, as familiarity with Sarri and the system will definitely benefit him. And listen, I understand that it's a different league and he's coming in the middle of the season and he's older, but I don't also think people can fully take seriously how he played for Milan the first half of the season, because it really sounds like all reports from the summer saying, A, he was really not thrilled that he got to miss out on playing with Ronaldo at Juve. And then once he went to Milan and he realized that Sarri wanted him at Chelsea, but the Chelsea board didn't. Really feels like he's had one foot out of Milan since the start of the season, and I'm not cutting him an excuse, but also I've spoken to some Milan guys. David, you probably have too. Sure, Higuain could have played better, but he also did not have great service at Milan. Suso's had a good season overall, started really strong, but has been very dry and stale as of late. So the service really has not been there for Gonzalo Higuain. And even though Chelsea are not leaps and bounds better than Milan right now, they have Eden Hazard, who is leading the Premier League in assists somehow with no goal scorers around him. And you give him someone like Gonzalo Higuain, who Milan certainly did not have in Hazard. You give Hazard Higuain and vice versa, I think they'll really work well with each other. Higuain, of course, will play striker, which then moves Eden Hazard back to his favorite left wing position. So I'm not saying he's going to score 10 plus goals, but I do think just him being on the pitch will help Chelsea. It'll help their more fluid attack. And I think even if he doesn't score 10 plus goals, he's going to be a goal threat. Defenders will still have to honor him, which will then help Hazard and others out with space. So predictions, I hate predictions, especially with goal tallies, but I'm thinking somewhere around 6, 7, 8 goals, but he will help Chelsea qualify for top four in the Premier League, which means Champions League football for next year. So he won't set the league ablaze, but I think he will do well enough to help Chelsea and well enough to justify this move. That's my opinion, David. What about you?
So my take is this. If you want to be optimistic about Higuain at Chelsea, you can point to a couple of things. He's had his best season ever under Sarri. Granted, that was a few years ago, but that was by far his best season. Broke a 60-year-old scoring season record in Serie A, which really says a lot. Now, if you're going to say that was a long time ago, the counter to that is that this time last year, Higuain was still good enough to be the main striker for Juve, who, not as strong as this season, but Juve was still a legitimate contender to win the Champions League, and Higuain was their main guy. So we're not talking about Crouch, Bentner, like some of the crazy stuff that I'm seeing on Twitter. And the final thing, and you pointed this out too, yeah, you can point that he's been bad at Milan. But look, almost every striker at Milan has struggled since Ibrahimovic left. So you can chalk it there. Now, if you want to be pessimistic, it's really all the pressure at Chelsea. He's joining a new league. I think joining the new league is somewhat hedged by the fact that he's going to be in a system that he knows really well, considerably better supporting cast, especially up front. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this. I'm going to frame it as if, like, when Sarri joined Chelsea, like, I can see why this is done. I definitely see some positives, but I do have some reservations on this.
All right, David. Well, this weekend was a lot of fun because we had Serie A back. I mean, every league was back, but we had a great weekend of Serie A. So let's get back to our normal Monday edition of Winners and Losers. Who do we got today?
I have to say, this was an awesome weekend in Serie A. I think the Super Cup, which we talked about last week, definitely wasn't a good look for the league. But despite the players, you know, being on a break for a while and you thought maybe they wouldn't be in great shape, we really saw some outstanding matches, starting with the Roma-Torino match on Saturday. I'm going to start with a Torino winner and Rincon winner for not getting a red card in that match. That was truly incredible. I think he beat up the entire Roma team except for goalkeeper Olsen. Maybe he got him on the way out to make sure he hit every single one of them. But that was a performance for the ages. I don't know how he didn't get a red card. And I think, you know, he should change his first name from Thomas to Diffidato, which in Italy is what you call a player who's one yellow card away from being suspended, because that's his frame of mind all the time. But on the Roma, you have to be thrilled with that match. I mean, look, you know, my biggest regret from the first half of the season is not being more patient with Roma. I kind of had in the back of my mind, this is a young team, I need to be more patient, but, you know, I overreacted a little bit. But I think right now Monchi looks really good. Di Francesco, it looks really good that the club kept him. So let's start with Zaniolo, player we plugged once again on Friday. I've been wrong plenty of times. I'm not someone that gets excited over young players, but this kid really is the real deal. I've said it before, really reminds me of the Pogba we saw on the Conte at Juve. He wasn't the only Roma midfielder with a really good performance. Cristante continues to do really, really well after a difficult start to the season. I thought Pellegrini's assist at the end of the match was fantastic. The timing of that pass to El Shaarawy, also a winner, who continues to score at a very impressive rate. So to me, Zaniolo, El Shaarawy, Cristante, Pellegrini, those are all players that Roberto Mancini has to be really happy with the way they're playing. Also want to give a shout out to Karsdorp. Got off to a really difficult start in that match, was getting torched. But I think after that, he kind of held his own pretty well. So that's another player that Monchi invested a lot that looked like a bust and maybe isn't so bad. Then we had Parma's win against Udinese. Parma continues to be a really, really solid team. That was, it's interesting that Udinese is in far worse shape than they are in the race to avoid relegation. Shout out to Gervinho and Inglese, both scored. That's a really nice offensive duo for a mid-table team. Their manager, Daversa, has been really excellent this season. I saw Parma's president today said, hey, I'd love to keep this guy for 10 years, but realistically, he's an up-and-coming manager that I think we're going to see on a mid-table team next season. So then on Udinese, although they lost, Okaka came back to Serie A, scored, tying it in. Luis Muriel, what a goal against Sampdoria. When you saw that goal, that's when you know why he had been compared to the Brazilian Ronaldo. So often after the match, Fiorentina coach Pioli told them, yeah, you kind of can see the Ronaldo flashes in him. So good for him, one of my favorite players. I was really excited to see that. In that match, we also had Quagliarella, just continues to score no matter what. That Fiorentina-Sampdoria match was really, really incredible. Great advertisement for Serie A. Then we had Sassuolo's draw at San Siro, and Handanovic had another excellent performance, which really tells you a lot about Sassuolo's performance. And two players we want to give a shout out to: midfielder Duncan, who was a Inter youth team product, who's been very solid for Sassuolo, and Kevin Prince Boateng, who did exceptionally well as the false nine in that match. We're going to talk about him a little bit in the questions, because that transfer, despite that performance, is still rather surprising, but there is an interesting context in that. Then we had on Sunday, Zapata with a poker of goal against Frosinone for Atalanta. He is now, as it stands now, before Juve plays against Chievo, tied with Ronaldo for the most goals in Serie A. Then we had an excellent match that Napoli had against Lazio. Really enjoyed that. I want to give a huge shout out to Ancelotti. You know, he had Koulibaly, Allan, Insigne, and Hamsik out. And I think the fact that he rotated so much earlier in the season, it paid off in this match, because his reserves, and I don't know if we can call them reserves, like co-starters, did excellent. Milik, who I had pegged as the breakout star in Serie A at the end of last season, he's been absolutely on fire. I never expected the free kick aspect to him. He's really good at those. He scored. I think he had a hit the post and a crossbar. Like, he's been really absolutely on fire. That deal Napoli did with Ajax, that to me goes down to like kind of what they did with Koulibaly, the Mertens. They've just been excellent on the international market. Fabian Ruiz, another player they got from abroad, did exceptionally well as well. Last winners, and this was the match I was watching this morning, we have to give Gattuso a lot of credit. I know he gets criticized a lot, and you know he's very honest in press conferences on transfers, which can be good and bad. But look, right now, Milan is sitting in fourth place right now. The season ended right now. Milan's back in the Champions League. If we go back to when Milan had all the injuries, Biglia, Bonaventura, Romagnoli, Musacchio, all out, there's no one who would have said Milan was going to be fourth right now. So we should give him some credit there. In this match, we had Borini play. We had Suso score with his right foot. You know, really, the world was really an odd place. Conti with another good match. And Paqueta, who's been really excellent in the three matches for Milan, really looks like the type of midfielder that Milan needs. And another very solid performance by Bakayoko. So those are our winners. We do have some losers. I'm going to start with Inter, and this is kind of a loser that almost feels like a winner, because Brozovic had a bad match, and not surprisingly, Inter struggled. We've been saying on the podcast for a while, as Brozovic goes, so does Inter. That wasn't a good match for him. Icardi also struggled in this match. And Asamoah, who have gotten off to a very good start for Inter at the beginning of the season, really hasn't been that good recently. So other losers are Frosinone and Udinese, who lost home matches in the race to avoid relegation. Udinese, especially painful, was at home against Parma. I mean, Frosinone lost to Atalanta, has been really on fire. So tough one for Frosinone, especially by such a wide margin. And the last one is Lazio. I mean, they've been really on free fall despite Milinkovic-Savic starting to play a lot better. They just keep losing against the top teams. And Napoli was no exception. We mentioned earlier Napoli was decimated and Lazio still lost. And I thought they played pretty well in the first half, but they really need to look at that. I still think Lazio has a lot of margins for improvement, but Simone Inzaghi, who this time last year was pegged as the great up-and-coming Italian manager, he's starting really to show some limitations. I don't think they should sack him or consider anything like that, but I think he needs to start figuring out something different because something's clearly broken at Lazio. So one thing that's never broken are the Twitter questions from our listeners. So, Alex, as usual, if people want to send us in a question, please do it with the Calcioland hashtag. We always take questions on Serie A, TV, music, film, podcasting, you name it. And which questions are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this. This one is very topical. What's the latest on Kevin Prince Boateng to Barcelona?
So today's a holiday in the U.S. I got up. I knew on Monday there's more transfer news than on weekends. So I was checking the Dimazza site to see what was going on, and you know, I was fairly quiet. Then all of a sudden, I see this tweet on Boateng being very close to Barcelona from Gianluca, and this I had to check like five times because I've been trolled by like fake accounts. I famously remember 1,000 names during the Condo Gobbia derby between Milan and Inter, like pretended to be Di Marzio, and he got me really good. Like I thought it was a real one. So I was like, what is going on here? So I saw this tweet. So I think my reaction was similar to almost everyone that, you know, read it. And it was just really kind of shocking. Look, you know, Boateng is a fairly big name, played for Milan and all, but he's been playing, you know, at Sassuolo. He's been injured this season. So it really came out of the blue. But then I thought about it a little bit more, and I remembered that, you know, and one of the lessons that I always say that transfer deals a lot of times don't happen in a vacuum, and we need to look at them in context. And it didn't dawn on me, but then I thought about it, that Barcelona has as a director Braida, who used to run the transfers on Milan. And Braida's always had a great relationship with Sassuolo. So that was the first domino. Now, I'm sure Barca fans, when Braida was hired, maybe it wasn't the Kevin Prince Boatengs of the world that they thought he'd be able to help them bring from Serie A. But in any event, here we are. Now, Sassuolo and Barcelona have done deals before. Last summer was for defender Marlon arrived at Sassuolo. I think this could start more deals between the two clubs. Midfielder Sensi, who has been linked to Milan, could be someone of interest to Barcelona. And I'm sure there are some young players that Barcelona would like to give an opportunity to play more regularly. And I think Sassuolo is a great destination. So let's look at it in the context. It's not just Boateng. There's more to it. So the deal is, and it looks like it's going to happen because the sporting director for Sassuolo is on his way to Spain, if he isn't there already, that he's going to arrive for a 2 million euro loan deal with an option to buy for 8 million after. Sassuolo got Boateng for free. It's pretty good financial return for them. And I think Barcelona is getting a very solid backup. Now, Boateng's very versatile. Was a midfielder, played as a false nine for Sassuolo really well. And look, if you don't want to believe my judgment, that's fine. But you can just look at Sassuolo in the standings. When Boateng was healthy at the beginning of the season, they were knocking on the door for a Europa League spot. They had the best attack in Serie A, I think, after 5 or 6 weeks. They were doing really well. Then Boateng got hurt, and they really struggled, and they were closer to the relegation race. Yesterday, he came back against Inter. Handanovic was the man of the match, but right after it was Boateng. He had a really good performance. So you don't want to take my word for it. That's fine. but you can just go look at the data. So this is a very intriguing deal. I have to say, very surprising, but it's one of those deals that once you start peeling the onion, you start seeing there's more rhyme or reason to it.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Has Ancelotti done a better job so far this season than Sarri did last season?
So this is a tough question. And, you know, I was thinking about this because yesterday that Napoli match was really intriguing to me because, you know, we saw Ancelotti use a different formation, like a 4-4-2, use a lot of bench players, something we really wouldn't have seen under Sarri. So I was like, hey, you know, this guy deserves a lot of credit. And he still kept a lot of the fun elements of Sarri ball there. So I got to give him a lot of credit. To me, it's somewhat similar to what Allegri did at Juve after Conte. Like, Conte took Juve from A to B, and Allegri took him from B to C. He focused on European competitions. He started rotating a little bit more, like, changed a little bit the tone at Juve. Now, obviously, Napoli and Juve have different standards. It's not that when Sarri left, it was with three titles in a row in the bag, but Sarri had definitely elevated Napoli higher than ever before, got them to the most points in a season. So Ancelotti kind of took a different approach. He, with De Laurentiis, they decided, okay, we need to start playing more young players, increase their value, like, make our squad feel more connected, try to do better in Europe. And look, they were in the group of death. They came really close to winning that group flat out. They were eliminated. And I think they're going to try in the Europa League. So to me, it's hard to say if it's better or worse. I would say he's impressed me. And I just think the standards are the objectives for Napoli are very different. Like, look, I know a lot of people criticize Napoli for, you know, punting all the other competitions, Coppa Italia, Europa League, Champions League, to win the Scudetto. But they did get to 91 points. And this is one of my pet peeves, Alex, and we've talked about it a lot of times. At the end of the day, only one team can win. And the only reason Napoli hasn't won is because Juve is so great. There are some people that would say it's not just because Juve is so great, but that's a whole other topic. But long and short of it, the only reason Napoli hasn't won anything is because of Juve. I think they're one of the best-run clubs that I've seen in Serie A for a very long time. They have balanced books. They have exciting players. They have a distinguished brand. This season, Napoli has slightly different objectives. I doubt they get to the same amount of points that Sarri had last year, but I think they're going to go for a trophy. So it's kind of hard to say who's better or worse. They just have different objectives. But kudos to Ancelotti. I've been very impressed with what he's done. So, Alex, I have a question for you. One of the transfer reports that we had on Di Marzio's site Friday was on Juve being linked to Lyon midfield and Ndombele. I hope I'm saying his name right. I know you're a big fan of Lyon. So what can you tell Juve fans? Or he's been linked to other teams as well. What can you tell us about him?
David, I'm going to be bold. I like Ndombele so much that I think if Juventus were to acquire him this summer, next year he would be Juve's best midfielder. Now, I like Pjanic. I have respect for Pjanic, Matuidi, Bentancur, Emre Can, Khedira, all of them. I rate them and I understand what they've done in the game. But I think Ndombele is that damn good that if he is acquired by Juve, Juve will win the next two Scudettos at least after this season, and their midfield will be back to being a really, really sound and dynamic midfield, and just a midfield that will be hard to parallel for other teams in Serie A. That's how highly I think of Ndombele, simply because he can do it all. Now, I would definitely say, first and foremost, he's a defensive midfielder, but he is not your average defensive midfielder. He is very capable offensively, moving with the attack. I really hate player comparisons. I hate player comps because I really like to believe, I know it sounds corny, that each player is their own player and nobody is exactly like another player. However, if I were to compare Ndombele to somebody right now, maybe Alon is not a bad comparison, because even though both players are very good defensively and have great work rates and great stamina, I also think both players are much more capable in the attacking phase than some may realize. Ndombele is a decent dribbler. dribbler. He's a decent passer. He's a capable shooter. He's never going to score 10 goals in a season, but he absolutely could build an attack and he could finish if given the right opportunity. He's just not a liability at all in the attacking phase. Now for Lyon, he will play further back, but they have so many offensive players. That's partially why he plays further back. I mean, Lyon is just littered and littered with young studs, but Ndombele is just as good as any of them, in my opinion. I just think he would be such a brilliant acquisition for Juventus. And yes, I mentioned the midfielders that Juve have, and all of them have their own qualities and are good, but I think Ndombele would be the number one must start in the midfield. Because when you look at a Pjanic or a Bentancur or a Matuidi or an Emre Can or a Khedira, you could probably sit them depending on the opponent. With Ndombele at 22 years old, I would really never see the reason to sit him unless you played him like three games in a row and he played full 90s. He would be a player I would run into the ground. If you're a Juventus fan and you saw these rumors, you should be super excited and you should be very hopeful that Juve wrap this up as quickly as possible, because as David alluded to, there are a lot of teams that would love having Ndombele in their side. So I'm gushing over him, but that is my opinion. He would just be an absolute star signing for Juventus, or for any team for that matter. So, David, while we're on the subject of Juve, what's the latest on Darmian and Juventus?
So as you were describing Ndombele, and I have barely seen him, you know, it made me think of one thing we were talking about on the podcast last week. Like, to me, Juve can't make good deals anymore. And I think Emre Can and Ramsey are good deals, but I don't know how much they move the needle. Based on what you described, he sounds like the type of player that can move the needle long-term for Juve. So let's see if that happens. Now, a move that probably that won't move the needle, but it's really more for depth, is Darmian being linked to Juve, a player they've pursued dating back to his time at Torino. And this has to do with Spinazzola, the former Atalanta left back who's on Juve, recovering from an injury. So Juve is trying to find a place for Spinazzola to play more regularly the rest of the season. And to me, that is wise. He needs to play, but they need a replacement, you know, for depth purposes. And I think Darmian works pretty well because he can work. He can be both a right back, left back. He can be an emergency third center back in a three-man defense. On a, you know, a long but option to buy deal, he would make sense. Now, he has an expiring contract. If this happens as a long but option to buy, Man United would extend his contract by 1 year. They'd get some financial benefits from this, and Juve gets a player that, you know, could bring depth. And look, you know, Nishinja has been pretty good for Juve. I don't think he's been as amazing as some people on Twitter, Cascarano, say, but he's been fine. And I think Darmian can kind of fall into that. He's definitely been a disappointment at Man United, but he can somewhat rejuvenate him. So my guess is this deal happens at some point this week, low at option to buy. Man United is going to make some money on this. Juve gets depth. Spinazzola gets to play on another team. Seems like a win for almost all involved.
All right, David, here's an interesting one. Does Milan have a realistic shot at Diarra of Napoli?
Yeah, so this was a report that came out Friday. Milan's very active, not surprisingly, trying to get another midfielder, although Biglia seems almost ready to come. And they tried to get Diarra on loan from Napoli. Now, you know, trying to get a player on easy, good terms from Napoli is really a Herculean effort. I'm not surprised that De Laurenti was like, no way. I think Napoli's position is simple. Although Diarra played pretty well yesterday, I think he's been a disappointment for them overall the past season and a half. If a club wants to make a big offer, 30 million or more, I think Napoli would move on. I think Diarra would like to play. I'm just not sure if a loan, especially to another Serie A club, although I guess there would be some advantages going to happen. So I'm not going to rule it out altogether. Let's see what happens. I also have to wonder, you know, if with the way Paquetá is playing, Bakayoko, Kessi, Biglia coming back, all of a sudden Milan's midfield doesn't look that bad. But, you know, I do rate Biglia more than most. And Bakayoko, I think at this point we can say he's legit for the rest of the season. But let's keep monitoring this one. It could develop further in the last stages of January.
Yeah, speaking of Bakayoko, another man of the match for Milan this morning. Wow, I can't believe that's the Bakayoko that was at Chelsea. All right, David, moving away from football, how about this? How do you like the new True Detective?
Yeah, so like most people, I really enjoyed the first season of True Detective. Mehanahy, Woody Harrelson, great cast, fun season. I think the wheels came off a little bit towards the end of it, but the first four episodes were really outstanding. You felt like HBO really had a great thing going. They could do a new season, get two famous actors to kind of headline it. And the following season, season two, was a big disappointment, like most. So I went into season three pretty open-minded. And I have to say, I've been so busy, I've only watched the first episode. But I really enjoyed the first one. Had, you know, all the things that were cool about season one of True Detective, like, you know, different timelines of events, like showing the same events over different course of years. Very good direction, some really incredible images, pretty powerful, some that you've seen on the trailer. I liked what they did. Rather than trying to go with two very well-known actors, they just got one, but one that's really in right now, and that's Mahershala Ali, who was the lead man in Moonlight when they won the Oscar. He's the co-lead in Green Book. He's got a lot of buzz right now. Green Book might do well at the Oscars. So I think HBO is kind of trying to ride that wave. And the first episode, he's outstanding. He's playing the same character at three different ages. Really, really good. So they're banking on him. He's a big actor now. The, you know, his partner, Stephen Dorff, used to be an actor that was fairly popular in the 90s and action movies. Not necessarily a good actor, but kind of a cool, crazy guy. And I have to say, at first, I was like, I don't know if this works, but he's kind of warming up to me. So again, I've only watched one episode. I'm going to try to watch the second and third one today. But I recommend it. I think it's definitely going to be maybe not as good as the first season, but definitely better than the second.
I rarely chime in on this stuff, but I love Mahershala Ali. He really is one of those trendy, damn good actors right now. And he was awesome in The Green Book. So, David, last Twitter question. Who are the most overrated rock bands in your opinion?
So thanks to Steven Corsaro, who sends me always a lot of great music questions for the podcast. That sends always fun to chat music with him. If you're into music, follow him at @D_Corsaro. Big Roma fan. He's crazy about Zaniolo right now. And why wouldn't you be if you're a Roma fan? So look, obviously, music is incredibly subjective. I would say even more than getting into if a player's good or bad. I think with music, it's very, very hard to say. So, you know, this is subjective, but I am going to try to back up who I have as overrated. And I'm going to start with Coldplay. And I think Coldplay is a very popular band. I definitely like some of their songs. I think it's great that they're somewhat of a still, you know, rock band that can sell out stadiums. They've been around for a while. I think A Rush of Blood to the Head is one of the best songs, like one of the really excellent songs that's been used in a TV series. It was in 6 Feet Under. They used it perfectly. But, you know, to me, and even they would say they really are Radiohead light, like the Radiohead from before they kind of put away guitars and all. I think they're also very similar to the Verve. So I think they're very derivative. So I think it's fair to say that they are overrated in that sense. But if you like Coldplay, I would recommend listen to Radiohead's first three albums. You're much better off with that. In the metal genre, I'll say that Anthrax to me is genuinely overrated. They have no business being considered in the big four with Slayer, Metallica, and Megadeth. Like they are not even in the same stratosphere as those. I would actually say if you had to put a fourth metal band from that era, I'd put Testament before them every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Other band, and you know, this is kind of hard to say because they're local guys. They're from the Boston area. They've been popular for a really long time. They have a lot of great songs. But to me, Aerosmith is kind of like pretty cheap Rolling Stone knockoff band. Like Joe Perry, I definitely think is a great guitar player, has a lot of riffs, but to me, kind of a little bit overrated there. But I have to say, you know, when I first moved to Boston, I bumped into Aerosmith one night, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry. Couldn't be nicer guys. But again, it's kind of like the Coldplay Radiohead thing. Like if you like Aerosmith, just listen to the Stones. You are much better off there. I will say, as more than just the band, as an era, I'll say the new metal era from the late 90s to me is the most overrated, but my least favorite metal phase, no guitar solos, kind of the hip hop influence to me. I'm going to use Korn as an example, Limp Bizkit too. I mean, those guys are really cheap Faith No More knockoff. So I'm going to put that whole era as overrated. And I'm going to close on Imagine Dragons. You know, I'm always complaining that there's no relevant, cool rock bands now, like in the new decade. And when I hear Imagine Dragons, I actually wish that were the case, because that's really, you know, music that just belongs in commercials. I'll never forget, like, one time I saw that they were playing at the TD Garden, the arena here in Boston, and I had no idea who they were. So I know I don't keep up with the times. I then tried to give them try to give them a chance, and I really wasn't impressed. So one thing that's not overrated that I want to give a shout out to, I had no desire to ever listen to a Cardi B song in my life, but after her recent feud with Tommy Lahren, this conservative talk show host, where she said she's gonna walk dog walker, I'm not ready to buy her entire catalog. So shout out to her. Okay, so now let's transition to the interview part of the podcast. We're going to go around the mid-table, the relegation race with our friend Paolo Mangone. I want to thank all our listeners. You guys are great for your support. I know a lot of you guys enjoyed the Soprano stuff last week. You guys know Alex and I put a lot of work into this podcast. It's a completely free podcast, so we rely on you to help us market it. Please keep tweeting about the podcast. Send us questions. If you can leave us on a review on iTunes, that's a huge help. So now let's close it out with a deep dive on the mid-table. So it's always a treat for me to be working with some of my younger colleagues that I'm blessed with to collaborate. So I have Alex on one line, and I have our transfer table master, Paolo Mangone, who's been on Di Marzio's side with me for a while. I'm glad we're squeezing one in, because Paolo is about to start. He's leaving Canada to start his adventure in Italy. So, Paolo, I'm thrilled to welcome you back to Calcioland. I know this is just an arrivederci, not an addio. So welcome back to Calcioland, buddy.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Okay, so Paolo, you and I were, you know, preparing this podcast yesterday, because with you, we like to talk about the mid-table, the relegation race. And this morning, the transfer gods were really good to us, because there was this kind of very surprising report on Kevin Prince Boateng, very close to joining Barcelona. So I know Sassuolo is one of the teams in your wheelhouse. There's been a lot of reaction to this rumor transfer, but I actually, you know, at first my reaction was shocked too, but then the more I thought about it, not that crazy. So without getting too much into the Sassuolo Barcelona dynamic, which we already talked about on the podcast, what's your take on Boateng's season at Sassuolo?
Well, he's been a utility man for Sassuolo. I know he played in midfield. He can play in midfield. He played as a center forward against Inter, and he's been producing. He had 5 shots on goal against Inter, and it was a hard-fought draw. And I think it was an astute signing. They had nothing to lose by getting him this summer, and now they look like they're about to make a profit on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I had some people tweeting me about the stats on Boateng, and it's like, look, he missed a few months. And quite frankly, Sassuolo really struggled when he was out. I mean, you can make a great case he's been their most important player. So speaking of a very important player, Duvan Zapata has taken Serie A by storm in a recent, you know, I'd say in the last month of 2018, started the this year, 2019, with a poker of goals against Frosinone. So, you know, on here, we try not to be too much prisoners of the moment, but I've been a big fan of Zapata even before this season. So I'm going to ask you, would you take Duvan Zapata over Piontek, who's ready to join Milan, and Belotti, a player who's been valued at a very high price and has been linked to West Ham recently? If you could take one of these three, who would it be and why?
So I thought about this question hard. I mean, I understand why Milan is looking at Piontek, 13 goals in the first half of the season, but he's only played one half of the season in Serie A. Instead of, you have Duván Zapata, who's already had experience at Napoli and already knows how to kind of play in a big club. So, I mean, I'd rather take Zapata over Piontek or Belotti because he already has the experience of playing at that higher level. I know he was used by Benitez when he was coach at Napoli. So, I mean, when he scores 15 goals since September, I mean, you can't overlook that, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And plus, I think Zapata, it's not just about the goals. It's on everything else that he brings to the table. Now, let me ask you about two strikers that returned to Serie A in the January window and actually faced each other yesterday. And again, I don't want to be too much of a prisoner of the moment because in that match, Muriel was pretty amazing. But let's say from today until the rest of the season, who do you think is going to have a bigger impact between Muriel and Manolo Gabbiadini, who's now at Sampdoria?
So at first, I was leaning towards Gabbiadini, but then I thought, okay, well, I think he's going to be overshadowed by Quagliarella because this guy's having another renaissance season. So now I'm leaning towards Muriel because it looked like he's replacing Simeone as the main target man for Fiorentina. So I'm definitely going to choose Muriel.
Okay. I'm a huge fan of Muriel. That goal yesterday was really pretty awesome. So now let's talk about a team that I think really exceeded expectations in the first half of the season. Parma's been a very good feel-good story. They made it all the way back from the fourth division to Serie A, got off to a great start of the season. They are really not a factor in the race to avoid relegation. And I think they've done pretty well in the January window. They brought in Kuchka, another player like Gabbiadini and Muriel, who returned to Serie A. So how much of an impact do you think he can make on Parma?
Well, I think he can be the leader in midfield, especially with his Serie A experience. That will go a long way, especially in the second half of the season when, you know, let's be honest, Parma could challenge for the last place in Europe. So I think he can go a long way, and especially give some depth in that midfield, which seems pretty light at the moment, before the arrival of Kuchka.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. You know, I think there's players that perform in similar roles that go for big fees, and, you know, they may be younger than him and all, but I think as far as impact, they're getting great value there. I'm very impressed with what they're doing. So now let's have a couple of questions on Cagliari. And Nicolò Barella's been in the transfer headlines for a while. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of momentum for him leaving in January, but I definitely think in the summer he's going to be gone. How would you describe Barella to someone who hasn't watched much of him?
I would describe it as a defensive regista. I use the word defensive because he has the most tackles as an under-23 player in Serie A. And a regista because Calgary's build-up play goes right through him. For example, the goal, the Farias goal, was a direct ball from Barella for the Calgary's tying goalie yesterday.
Now, let me ask you about a player that Cagliari acquired, which to me was like really Chievo kind of waving the white flag on the season. And this is Walter Bierza. I'm a big fan of his. So let me ask you what you think Bierza can bring to Cagliari.
Well, in my opinion, he's an all-around player, free kick taker, trequartista, and he has a lot of flair and talent. And it is an added benefit because he was also coached by Rolando Marant, who's coach at Chievo, and he brings all that tactical knowledge to Cagliari. So, I mean, I think he's just going to fit right into the system. There'll be no hiccups. It's just going to be, he's going to fit in right away.
Okay. So now let's talk about a team you and I have debated a lot offline throughout the season. I think you're going to end up being proven right over me that Bologna is better than Chievo, especially now that Bierza is gone. So they acted pretty quickly early in the transfer window. They acquired both Sansone, so another player that's returning to Serie A. They don't call it Il Bel Paese for nothing. And Soriano, who struggled to make an impact at Torino. So how much do you think they can help Inzaghi's squad?
Well, they helped yesterday. I know Sansone played yesterday, and they pulled out a draw against Spal, which is another important point because they're only about 3 points away from the last spot in Serie A. But I think... I think at the end, it will come down to who has the better depth and who can get the most points against the other relegation strugglers. But I think Bologna has, now with these two players, Soriano and Sansone, they have a better chance of sneaking out safety at the end of the season.
Okay, so let me ask you, because you watch these lower table matches like it's the Super Bowl, and I love you for it. So if you have to, there are a couple of players on, let's say in Italy, we'd say on the right side of the table that have impressed you this season, maybe some that we haven't talked about so far on the podcast?
I've mentioned Ahmed Traore before from Empoli, I think, and he was linked to Inter Fiorentina, and rightly so. I think he's a midfield engine who literally does not stop running for the entire game. And I think his links to Inter Fiorentina were well-deserved. My second player is Emanuele Lazzari, 6 assists in Serie A and only second to Suso. And he plays as a right wing back. He's not even a winger. And my third and final player that have really impressed me is Alessandro Bastoni, who has 9 or 10 starts with Parma. And, you know, Parma is now challenging for a European spot. And he's on loan from Inter. So I hope Inter fans are getting excited about this young center back.
Yeah, what an embarrassment of riches at center back for Inter. I think Marotta must feel really at home there. Godin, Bastoni, the ones they already have. So good shout there. Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot to close out this section of the podcast. Right now, we have Bologna 14 points, Frosinone 10 points, Chievo 8 points, granted one match less, but in bad shape. Do you think these are going to be the three teams that are going to be relegated, or is there one of them that's going to be able to be saved, and who's going to replace them if that's the case?
So, as you know, I've always been ranking Bologna a little bit higher than everyone, but I still do believe in Bologna could escape. And but 100% is going to be Chievo and Frosinone that are going to go down. And I think Bologna could be replaced by Udinese or Genoa. I know Udinese is struggling, and Genoa just lost today. So I think it's going to be one of those two teams.
Interesting. I kind of like Empoli as a club, so I hope you're right. So let's close on the upper level of the mid-table. I'm going to ask you to rank right now Fiorentina, Torino, and Sampdoria.
So without being the prisoner of the moment from the game yesterday, that was a fantastic game, a 3-3 draw between Samp and Fiorentina. But if I take the whole first half of the season as a whole, I rank Samp higher than Fiorentina just because they had a better start to the season. And then I rank Torino last because they haven't created any inspiration in me. They're kind of a very bland team, a very typical Walter Mazzarri team, very defensive, and they just like to squeak out those draws and those one-goal wins.
Okay. Paolo, as always, thank you so much for your contributions. You are the master of the mid-table, wherever you are, Canada, Italy, you're always welcome here. And from Calcio Land, we wish you buona fortuna in Italy. I'm sure you're going to do great over there. So thanks for all your contributions.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate the message. Good luck. And just one more thing before I go. I have to plug Quagliarella for the Nazionale. I don't think it's fair that he should be put aside just because he's 35. I know his coach, Gianpaolo, said that he should be considered. So I just wanted to get that in before I had to.
Well, very well said. Because I'll tell you, I have to say, as someone who was extremely pessimistic on the Azzurri's talent at the start of the season, I think Mancini has to be thrilled with all the young players that emerged. And he is just missing that goal scorer. And right now, I think in the short term, Italy needs to improve their ranking, need to get to the Euro. So I'm completely with you. I second that. So well said. And thank you so much, Paolo. Talk to you soon.
Take care, David.